Welcome to the Erectile Dysfunction Radio Podcast. This is the podcast dedicated to educating and empowering men to address erectile dysfunction, improve confidence, and enhance the satisfaction in their relationships. This podcast is brought to you by ErectionIQ.com. Learn more at ErectionIQ.com.
Welcome to the Erectile Dysfunction Radio Podcast. I am Mark Goldberg, certified sex therapist. I am deeply passionate about working with men like you to help resolve their ED.
We are here with another episode of the Erectile Dysfunction Radio Podcast. Today we are joined by Dr. Kevin Chu. Dr. Chu is a private practice urologist and men's health specialist in Los Angeles, California. He grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, completed his undergraduate studies at UC Berkeley, and attended medical school at the New York Medical College. He underwent his urology training at the University of Miami. He is currently a co-host of the podcast Man Up, A Doctor's Guide to Men's Health. If anybody listens to this podcast and has not had a chance to check that out, I do highly recommend it. Dr. Chu, thank you very much for joining us.
Mark, thanks so much for having me on. This is an excellent podcast. I really enjoy it. And you do such a great service for patients out there, really getting good, accurate information out there, and to kind of really dive into a lot of topics that a lot of guys are really afraid to talk about. So, you know, commend you. It's a great podcast.
Thank you. Really do appreciate that feedback. And again, the more information that's out there from reliable, credible sources, I think it is the better for patients. So to that end, one of the topics that does come up more and more frequently is something we want to explore today, which is shockwave therapy, and in particular, shockwave therapy for ED. So just to get us started, can you give our listeners an overview of what shockwave therapy is, and how is it utilized in the urology space?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, you're seeing shockwave more and more. You're hearing it on the radio, you're seeing it all over the internet. And, you know, to kind of establish where it all began, actually back in the 70s and to current day, we use shockwave therapy for kidney stones. That's actually where a lot of this technology is based out of. And shockwaves are basically acoustic waves that generate enough pressure and enough energy that can cause a quick spike. And that quick spike can basically cause carryover of some energy into deeper parts of the body. So for kidney stones, we use a much more higher power amplitude to basically break up kidney stones. And as time has gone on, other areas such as orthopedics has started using it for such as ligament injuries or musculoskeletal injuries at a much lower pressure. And back in around 2010, there was, you know, naturally a little bit of look at, hey, maybe we can apply this to the penis. Maybe this could help with erectile dysfunction, again, at a much lower energy. So in a nutshell, shockwave is basically delivering acoustic waves at a high enough energy level that will basically cause this spike and kind of carry out some of its actions inside the tissue.
Okay, now you mentioned that the original, or at least one of the original uses of shockwave therapy was to break up kidney stones. And one of the issues that does come up around erectile dysfunction is potentially the buildup of plaque. So, mm-hmm. You know, when I hear like shockwave was used for kidney stones, breaking things up, like, my head starts to go in that direction. So could you fill our listeners in a little bit about what the goal or the intended mechanism of shockwave therapy is in terms of ED?
Absolutely. A lot of my patients do come in with kind of that same mindset. They're like, so look, I'm here to kind of break up some plaques to improve my blood flow. Actually, the hypothesis or the thought process of how shockwave therapy works in the penis is actually a little bit different. All right. So basically the energy that's being able to be applied and the acoustic wave that's basically transmitted will actually get into the tissue and cause what we call a cavitation bubble, meaning it's essentially caused this big bubble to expand within the tissue and within the bloodstream. And that cavitation bubble actually collapses, right? It collapses. And actually when it collapses, it causes some trauma around the areas. And that trauma actually will recruit things called growth factors. Things that will tell the body, hey, make more new, you know, blood, like capillaries, make, you know, tell this area to regenerate. And that's actually how the mechanism is thought of how shockwave works, not by physically breaking up any sort of plaque or anything like that, but actually inducing local trauma to basically tell the body to restore, regenerate in this area. Very different from kidney stones where we're actually not trying to restore it. We're trying to break that stone up and, you know, get the stuff out.
Okay, so just to clarify, so the idea of shockwave is to spurt the growth or the regeneration of, I guess, arteries or capillaries that are going to deliver, I guess, more blood to more areas of the penis?
Absolutely. It's neoangiogenesis, or, you know, basically new blood flow, new blood areas in the penis. Now, there's also hypothesis that this can cause nerve regeneration, that this can improve all these other things, stimulate stem cells. That's a little less proven. But what we do see is increase in growth factors in areas that have undergone shockwave.
Okay. Now, Dr. Chu, some of the questions that we get pertain to conditions outside of erectile dysfunction, but you know, certainly have to do with other areas of sexual dysfunction, like ejaculatory disorders, or sometimes things that have to pertain to sexual pain. Are there other conditions in the sexual function space that shockwave therapy has been tried or has been shown to have some impact or effect?
That's an excellent question. So one of the areas that it's been looked at a little bit more is something called Peyronie's disease, when you have a little bit of penile curvature. And this is typically caused by a palpable penile plaque. This is an area that's been looked at. In our current guidelines, there is advocate for use if you're having penile pain. But to actually have it improve the condition, which is improving penile curvature, there's a lot less data on that. You know, the one thing I always try to strive and tell my patients is, look, we should practice evidence-based medicine. And erectile dysfunction is the main area where this has been looked at. And so other areas in sexual dysfunction, less looked at. And it's the overwhelming evidence really supports its use only in ED.
Okay, that's just important to clarify, because you know, for people who do not listen to this podcast, by, you know, people that I come in contact with, oftentimes do not distinguish between what we refer to as erectile dysfunction as opposed to an ejaculatory disorder. A lot of times they just put that under the general rubric of ED, and then they hear a commercial shockwave therapy and they go and do shockwave. But you're saying there's no real evidence at this point, and like, maybe it hasn't even really been studied properly to.
Yeah, you know, shockwave, we are addressing like increasing blood flow into the penis. It's, you know, and we'll touch a little bit on later, but in Europe, the guidelines for its approval of use is in vasculogenic erectile dysfunction. You know, blood flow is the main issue. And ejaculatory disorder, and as you know, can be caused by a multitude of things, right? A multitude of things. Could erections be one portion of it? Yes. But I think when you're approaching ejaculation disorders, it's much more encompasses a lot of different things. And it's a lot of other different pathways that are involved that that shockwave has not been proven to really show any sort of improvement in.
Yeah. So, Dr. Chu, what makes shockwave therapy different from other treatment options that are available for ED?
That's an excellent question. So what are your typical treatment options for ED? You got oral medications. These are your typical PDE5 inhibitors, such as Viagra, Cialis, that you take. Then you have, you know, vacuum erection devices. You can also have constriction rings. Then you have injections, or you may potentially go down the road of surgery. So that these have been our typical medications or treatment options for erectile dysfunction. Most of these are all band-aids. These are all just kind of putting, you know, like, oh, the symptom has kind of progressed. Let's try to, you know, kind of get you back to your treatment goal, but we're not actually reversing anything. That's where shockwave, its promise is. It's different, right? A patient who takes Cialis, a low-dose Cialis, maybe on shockwave, we can get you so you're not needing that oral medication, right? So there is some sort of restoration or some sort of rejuvenation. I don't love that word, but in you know, lack of better words, kind of thought process with shockwave. And so that's the promise, and that's what's different from it versus all the other treatment options. Now, as a sexual medicine doctor, I find it important that you got to consider all of it, right? And to mitigate expectations on where patients will kind of reach with shockwave versus all the other options.
Okay. So if I'm hearing you correctly, the restorative, or the potential for a restorative effect, is really what makes it a bit more unique and a bit different from other options.
Absolutely. The other options, again, we are just kind of masking or putting a band-aid on the situation, not stopping its progression. Shockwave has the promise that it could.
Okay. Now, Dr. Chu, when you were describing the mechanism, I imagine that you were trying to give the best description possible in layman's terms. Now, hearing about this, you know, this bubble and it blows up and then it, causes inflammation and whatnot. Like this could potentially be unappealing. So are there any risks associated or any like side effects that are associated with shockwave therapy in light of this, like what it sounds like, again, potentially like a localized intentional inflammation process that gets set off?
Mark, that's an excellent question. I can't tell you how much my part of my day is explaining to my patients when I go like, hey, look, have you heard of shockwave therapy? And the first thing that goes into mind is like, well, like I am not ready to have my penis exploded or have something significant cause a shock to it. So I kind of tell a patient, I always tell them, you know, sit back and think about it. This is all happening at a cellular level, okay? Happening at a cellular level. And the shock that's being induced, for the most part, you'll feel a little mild shock to it. Very, very mild. Some patients don't feel a little bit of tingling. And that's about it, all right? In terms of, if you look at all the studies that have been done, when we look at the adverse events that have occurred from shockwave therapy, it's actually rather rare. You know, you have a few occasional patients that had some, you know, persistent tingling that seems to kind of go away. Had some with some very mild hematomas, and even then, mild bruising. That was very rare. In the overall sense of things, which is why I think maybe the, you know, the procedure's kind of accelerated in its adoption, is that it has rather minimal risks or side effects for a patient, and it's tolerated very well.
Okay, so on the topic of patient education or how you speak to your patients, can you walk us through like what a typical shockwave therapy session entails for a patient?
Absolutely. So these are procedures that are done in the clinic. All right. I guide patients is about 10 to 15 minutes for each visit. And basically what it is you'll come into the procedure room and you'll basically just be generally undressed from the bottom down. And the whole point of shockwave is to target. You have two kind of cylinders on each side of your penis, and this is called the corpus cavernosum. And that's kind of one of the main areas that we target with shockwave. So there's going to be a probe, all right, and basically some ultrasound gel is placed in the areas of target. So, you know, let's say we're targeting first the right-sided corpus cavernosum, put a little bit of gel there, and then the probe is going to be placed there, and then basically initiation of shocks will occur, all right? There's going to be a certain number of shocks that are placed on each area of interest. And again, these can last anywhere from 3 to 5 minutes. And once all areas are targeted, procedure is complete, and that's it, all right? No invasiveness, nothing else kind of really goes on with the procedure. It's just shocks applied to the side, basically some jelly, and the targets of interest.
Just to clarify, does the patient feel those shocks? Does it feel like a small little needle, or is it something which really isn't sensed at all?
For the most part, I'll tell you, most patients feel maybe, if anything, a mild tingling. That's what it is, a little mild tingling. Not going to feel like a needle actually going in or anything like that, just mild tingling. One of the common questions I also get is, you know, regarding, you know, where are these shocks going, right? And as I touched upon it, it's, you know, the corpus cavernosum or on each side of the penis. I tell guys, picture 3 o'clock and 9 o'clock if you're looking down on your penis. We're basically shocking one side of that and then the other side of that. Other area that we also do kind of shock is something in the perineal area, which is the area between the scrotum and the rectum. And basically, this area also still has kind of like the bodies of your penile muscle, and which is why we kind of target those areas as well.
Now, what are the success rates of shockwave therapy?
So don't listen to the radio when they say, like, you know, we have 95% success rates with this. It's actually, if you look at all the data and how I counsel my patients, it's almost kind of a flip of a coin. So how do we even measure success? Well, if you look at all the randomized control trials that were done out there, we basically do questionnaires. That's kind of our main way of checking on a patient's symptoms and seeing for improvement. And these are either with IEF questionnaires or SHIM questionnaires. And, you know, in all the data, it shows roughly about 50, maybe a little bit more than 50% where there was improvement. Now, this comes with an asterisk. This comes with an asterisk because one of the things that I always try to get that message out with shockwave therapy is that this has to be done for the right patient, right? Patient selection is very important. So if you gave it to every single patient, I don't think you're going to see a 50% improvement. But in highly, you know, queried patients, you know, highly selected, we do tend to see around 50%.
Okay, and Dr. Chu, to that end, so what is that population, or how do we determine the population that is the best or the right fit or would benefit the most from shockwave therapy?
Data right now is showing that any patient with mild to moderate ED, again, these can kind of really be quantified well with questionnaires. One way to kind of, I make it easy for my patients, like if you took a Cialis and you get good results with it, or rather decent results, these are the type of patient populations that I think would get good response. And that's what the data kind of shows. If you're getting no erections on maximum dose oral PDE5 inhibitors, I'm going to really, you know, tell you and set your expectations that I don't think this is going to necessarily work. There may be better options for you out there to get your treatment goal. That's mainly it. So mild to moderate ED patients.
Okay. And out of curiosity, I have not personally read the studies. Do they control for a placebo or a psychological lift just by virtue of a patient investing into a treatment or trying to take those steps? I could imagine that there could be like a certain like psychoactivation effect, that if somebody were to be having, let's say, psychogenic components that were weighing down, just by starting to engage actively in a treatment process, it could start to move them in that direction. I'm just wondering if we know if that has been accounted for or been controlled for somehow in the studies.
That's a fabulous question. When you look at, you know, there's probably about 17, 18 randomized controlled trials now over the course of the past decade that's looked at that. And a lot of that's actually addressed in the limitations. If you look at all the studies, that's actually one of the main limitations, because psychogenic ED. Now, some of the studies, they basically try to include Doppler ultrasounds as kind of one of the metrics before and after. Doppler ultrasound being like, hey, look, you know, you're having like rather good erections. It doesn't even meet the, you know, the definition of actual having decreased, you know, systolics or blood coming in, or having increased venous leak. If, you know, they try to use that to kind of adjust some of the limitations to try to find the patients that do have cyclogenic ED. But, you know, if you look at the most recent meta-analysis, that's still one of the main kind of limitations of all the studies, right? And it's one of the hard things for me too, whenever I treat, you know, erectile dysfunction, because it is so important that it isn't just purely biological. It really does encompass, you know, as I kind of approach it, like a biopsychosocial. There's so much going on. And again, I think ED, if you look at it or for the shockwave, yeah, it really may help from the biological perspective of it. But these studies, you know, really didn't kind of address that.
Okay, that's yeah, certainly a you know, point of interest for myself, hopefully for my listeners as well, is just taking into account the psychological factors. Now, is there any ongoing research or any advancements in the field of shockwave therapy? Like you were mentioning, there are these radio ads that are out there, and people are plucking information from all over the place to try to determine, like, if this is a good fit for them. Like, where do we stand right now in terms of protocol, in terms of like what we know about this treatment, and where is this headed?
You know, when you go to a bunch of these conferences, which, you know, all kind of the thought leaders try to get together and, you know, come to a consensus on where we stand on different technologies for treatment for patients. Shockwave has been very controversial, right? Shockwave is controversial because if you look at all the literature, a lot of different docs were using different machines. We're using different generators. We're using different protocols. So if I was to give you a quick answer of where we are now, we're still ongoing. We're still trying to find or come to a consensus. What's the machine that should be used? What is the protocol that should be used? Now, more and more, we're getting more and more data. There was a recent study that was published, I believe, in November that had a good consensus of what a lot of urologists are going for in terms of what is the energy that should be used? What is the, you know, what kind of machine or what kind of generator should be used? And what, you know, when these shocks should be delivered? You know, you're going to hear someone say on the radio, hey, you should get a shock every single week for the next year. There's no data to support that at all. All right. A lot of the data right now is kind of supporting basically about 6 shockwave treatments. So that's kind of what I guide my patients. That's if you're looking out there. 6 shockwave treatments, whether it's spread over the course of 3 weeks or 6 weeks or with some pause. That's kind of where we're at in terms of our understanding of what works best for the patient. But it's ongoing. It's ongoing. You know, it's a lot of heterogeneity and all this stuff. And so it's important to know where you're getting your information from.
Yeah. So if somebody knows they come from a, say, multi-generational ED family, or they're predisposed with circulatory issues, or you know, maybe diabetes or whatnot, is there a role for Shockwave as a preventative measure, something that would help kind of maintain the current mechanisms of blood flow and perhaps prevent them from erosion?
This is an awesome question. And do I think there is? Potentially. Would I tell patients to go out there right now and do it? No, because there's no good evidence for that. But, you know, I'm a big proponent of, you know, medicine needing to be looked at differently. You know, we've done so much of just waiting when things are bad to try to treat. And this question is fantastic, because this is how we should be looking at our ongoing research. You know, can we use this? Do we see that there is, you know, potential for lengthening out a patient's, you know, lifespan or health span before they reach that time when they need an oral pill or they need injections? I sure hope so. There's no good data that supports that, but I inside do believe that there will be a place down the line once the technology decreases in its cost. I think that's one important thing, as well as, you know, there's more consensus of, you know, protocols and when it should be used.
Help us kind of wrap this segment up. I'm wondering, Dr. Chu, if you have any advice for patients who are considering Shockwave treatment, and in particular, I want to emphasize this. I recognize how distressing erectile dysfunction is, and there are a lot of people out there who are also aware of the distress this causes, and they tend to capitalize on that with all sorts of, you know, products. Some of them are legitimate, some of them less so. So what advice would you give to one of our listeners who may be discovering this podcast for the first time after experiencing ED, and we are that first point of information, perhaps, about Shockwave therapy?
So first off, know where you're getting your information from. I think that's the most important thing, and one that I, you know, always try to talk about on my podcast as well. Where you get it, just like you said, there are bad actors out there, right? There are people trying to capitalize on distress, and men's health, and in particular erectile dysfunction, is a hard area for guys to talk about. And so the internet has become this great resource, right? But, you know, you have to know where you're getting your treatment from and who you're getting your information from. I'll tell you, there are machines out there that someone can purchase off of Amazon for $95 that does not produce enough energy to give proper shockwaves, but then they can charge you a high sum of money. And basically that sum of money is taken from you, and you're not going to have had any improvement or had even any healthy discussion on erections. You know, Mark, you do such great stuff, and in terms of like how, right, it's not just the biological aspect of it. There's a psychological aspect to it. And that should be part of the discussion, to know that, hey, maybe I don't need to pay $10,000 for a treatment that some people are charging that may not be necessary for you.
Okay. Dr. Chu, thank you very much. This has been really, really informative. I know this is probably going to be one of the major, like, emerging, like, elements, not just in the treatment of, but also in the prevention of, and maybe, like you said, when costs really do come down, as it often does with technology, this could be something which is like part of just a general regimen for maintaining health over the lifespan. Certainly as we, you know, tend to be living longer and wanting to live like with a, you know, sexual aspects of our lives for longer and longer. This technology is probably going to be on the forefront. And the information that you share with us today is like super important for our listeners, both those who are looking to just maintain healthy erections and a healthy sex life, and those people who are struggling with and trying to address and improve on erections.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on, Mark. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Erectile Dysfunction Radio Podcast. For more information on today's topic and understanding how the mind impacts erectile dysfunction, please visit erectioniq.com. That's erectioniq.com.